if your kid came home and they had a piece of artwork that they did at school, or you wouldn't go, gosh, I've really seen better turkey handprints from others. You're going, no, like, that's like your unique hand. There's no one else in this world that will create something that looks just like that because it was you. We need creativity in our life because it reminds us of our unique self that only we can bring to the table. This book that I wrote, sure, there is probably countless books on the same subject. There's probably far better writers than I am, but this was my creative expression. And this is my unique take on these topics and with these words and my stories, the stories that I've lived. I think we need those creative moments to help remind us of that very thing, which I think helps combat that comparison because nobody else could do this. So it's just me. We need that to help remind us of our unique selves.
Hello and welcome to the Minimalist Moms podcast. Joining me today for her second appearance on the show is author Sarah Bragg. In this conversation, Sarah discusses her new book, Is Everyone Happier Than Me? And addresses the questions of unhappiness that often arise in one's mid-30s. She emphasizes the importance of authenticity in overcoming identity crises. And Sarah also explores the impact of social media on happiness, highlights the role of creativity in combating comparison, the significance of friendships in navigating loneliness, and, as always, so much more. This episode was actually incredibly encouraging to me to record, and I truly feel like Sarah and I are kindred spirits, so I can't wait for you to hear this one. But before we get there, I quickly want to share the Minimalist resource of the week. I've said it so many times, but I obviously love to support local businesses and entrepreneurs. And today I want to share a local to Columbus nonprofit called the Scatter Joy Project. What's really cool about this nonprofit is if you check out their social media or website, thescatterjoyproject.com, you can help from wherever you are. I want to tell you a little bit more about it. So obviously mental health is now a more prevalent topic of discussion. I talk about it a lot on the podcast, but awareness alone doesn't necessarily drive change. So the Scatter Joy Project is a movement designed to bridge the gap. The reason I thought this would be a great fit for the Minimalist resource is because the Scatter Joy Project is really fueled by the belief in intentional conversations around mental health. Their ultimate goal is to make mental health care more affordable for all. So again, even if you're not in Columbus, you can support the Scatter Joy Project by checking them out on social media or their website, which I'll be sure to include both in the show notes. Mental health awareness and the enhanced accessibility for people is something that's really important to me, as therapy has been a wonderful resource for me throughout seasons of my life. So I love to see nonprofits like this really making a difference. All right, and with that, let's get into the conversation with Sarah Bragg. Well, Sarah, it's good to see you again. Thanks for joining me today.
I know. I'm really happy to get to join you again. Makes me happy.
Your episode last time was one of my most downloaded ever, so I'll be sure to include that in the show notes. But yeah, I was really excited that you were releasing this new book, Is Everyone Happier Than Me? This met me where I'm at right now and some questions I've been asking myself. I'm 35, and a lot of people that I talked to said that that was the start for them of questions, curiosity. We are just at the bottom of this mountain, possibly. But yeah, I'm getting ahead of myself. Why don't you go ahead, reintroduce yourself, and then we'll get into your book.
Yes. Well, it just makes me really happy that your audience resonated so much with the last time I was here talking about motherhood and how, gosh, it's really about raising ourselves when it comes to all the things we think we're raising our kids. And then, oh, I really need to learn that. And I'm really growing in that way. So yes, I am a mom. My girls now, I have two girls. They are 13 and 15. So we are in high school, about to start driving, and I just need to get out of middle school. This eighth grade, I'm done with eighth grade, but we're getting close. Live in Tennessee, and I feel like I wear a lot of hats. I'm obviously a writer, podcaster. I help my parents with their family wedding venue. So I feel like I do a lot of different things in life, but that's a little snapshot of me.
Yeah. So it's funny. This is just a side note. The subtitle of your book is called An Honest Guide to the Questions That Keep You Up at Night. And that is one of those things. You said your daughter's ages and they're almost to driving. That is one of those things that I am just dreading one day. I am so terrified for my kids to be on the road, not just because of themselves, but because of other fools that are driving.
Yeah. I mean, you just have no control, which that's always been the case, even when we were teenagers.
I'm sure our moms felt like that. But you hit a great point. It's like, there's just so many more distractions than there were when we were learning to drive. I have been put in my place by myself. I mean, I put myself in my place on multiple occasions now that I am like driving with her and seeing the road through her eyes, and how I'll get so frustrated at drivers. I'm driving, like, why are they going so slow? Or why are they, you know, and realizing, what if it's just a 15-year-old girl who's scared to and not sure how to be? And so I've gained a lot of perspective and compassion and empathy helping her learn how to drive.
Kind of diving into the conversation, I mean, I feel like that's a good question. So you made me think of a question that I could ask you. So you had this question that may have kept you up at night driving. Maybe it still does. But now you have some insight that maybe wasn't there prior to all of this experience for you. Do you feel like sometimes when we get the insight that, actually, that's a dumb question. I just feel like sometimes we'll dwell on something and it becomes anxiety for us. But then once we have like a hint of it, it's not as bad as we thought. But how do we go back to the beginning and not worry and allow ourselves to let our worry spin?
Yeah, I think you're hitting at the right point. Like, we ask these questions and we, as long as we just sit and ruminate and worry and we just stay in that place, we will just remain really anxious and really stressed. It's getting to the point of like curiosity that helps us move forward. So me saying like, oh, I wonder if other people I'm getting frustrated at their behavior in the car, might be like my daughter and having intense anxiety over driving, or maybe they're just having a rough day and they're just, you know, it's just how it is. And so it's like getting to that place of curiosity. I really think that's the starting point for getting out of that anxious, worry, stress. And so really, no matter what question is keeping you up at night, we have to get to the point of getting curious and starting to pay attention to what's underneath that worry. Like, what's really underneath that fear, or what's really underneath, and wrestle with that. And then I think that when you get to that point, even if you don't have an answer, even if you're like, well, I can't really do anything about that. Like we said with driving, I can't control this whole environment that she's stepping into. But it's helped me let go of some of that anxiety just from starting at that place of curiosity.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's go back. Your book is called Is Everyone Happier Than Me? So at what point for you did you start maybe just noticing that you were unhappy, or maybe not as happy as you could be? When did that begin for you?
I do think you're right. You said it a few minutes ago about like being 35, and that really is kind of some starting points. You know, I think we spend our 20s and we're full of, you know, idealistic, we can do this, the world is my oyster, like, watch out, I'm going to conquer all. And then someday in your 30s, you start sort of going, huh, I didn't think life was going to look like this, or this is not how I imagined, or I thought I would be in a different place by now. Like, why am I still not reaching this point? And I think that was what it was for me. I think that my mid to late 30s, I really started wrestling with some of those things of going, oh, I just thought I would be in a different place by now, and I'm not. And having to reckon with it. And then going into my 40s, I feel like there was things that, you know, maybe my 30s were a lot about my career reckoning, and then 40s was a lot of my body changing and reckoning and going, oh, well, I heard stories about women gaining weight in their 40s, but that won't be me. Like, you know what I mean? Like, things like that where you're just like, oh my gosh, so much is unknown. I all of a sudden felt like a middle schooler all over again. Like, I'm raising middle schoolers and I'm like, oh, we're asking the same question. Is anybody like me? Do I matter? Is everyone happier than me? Like, my girls were asking those questions too. So I do feel like for me, it was in those mid-30s to mid-40s. I'm 45 now. And we're just asking a lot of questions because, again, you've kind of lived long enough to go, I don't know that this is coming out the way that I thought it was going to play out. And so I think a lot of us are feeling that way.
So the other day I was reading something on Instagram and the person said, do you show up in most circumstances as your authentic self? And I started thinking, I'm like, what does that even mean? So then I thought, Okay, I think that means just we don't chameleon to whomever it is that we're with. I think there's going to be a little bit of that with the different friends that we have, with how comfortable we feel, but really not hiding elements of your personality just to make someone else, I don't want to say to make someone else feel more comfortable or just to not embarrass yourself. Maybe you're ashamed of an element of your personality. So then I started spiraling about it because I'm like, am I even a good person? If I was my actual true self with everyone, they probably would think I was some jerk. Or I don't know. I just started overthinking this whole thing. And I was going to process with you as we talked about your book. But I feel like I'm a little stuck with that. And again, I'm wondering why I'm starting to feel that way now at 35, because I felt so confident in my 20s and even in my early 30s. And there's still a confidence that I have here, but there's an identity crisis, if you will.
First of all, let me just say, I think you're very normal. I think what you're feeling is so normal, because I think what you're describing is so true. I think we start hitting that point. And maybe raising my girls going through puberty has helped me have some compassion for myself, because I'm looking at them going, yeah, like I just texted my husband last night and my 13-year-old, I'm like, I'm going to kick her out of the car. She is so rude. And I would have never thought that this child would ever act like this in her entire life. She has always been so kind. So she's the one who sees people, all these things. But it's this age and it is this weird season that she is like physiologically going through, and she has kind of no control over it. And so I know she will come out of it, because I have a daughter who has come out of it. And so that has helped me go, I think that this is what is happening with us in this phase. Like, we've been very confident in who we are and what we're doing and why we're here. And it all just sort of, it's like someone just shook it up and turned it upside down. And you're kind of like, oh, well, I don't know anymore. What do I really like? I feel like I'm thinking like, well, what kind of like food do I like? What am I just saying yes to things because I've just been conditioned to always say yes to these things or no to these things? And so I don't think you're abnormal, but I think this is very much that season of life where you're going to start asking a lot of questions and kind of getting down to who you really are now. And it's okay if you're a little bit different than you were before. And, you know, I think that this is just, it's just a really hard season, I think, for a lot of us. And that's, you know, the book, Is Everyone Happier Than Me? I don't have a 3-step guide. If you just do these 3 steps, you're like solved forever. I wish I would probably be a millionaire if that was the case. But it really is just, these are the years that we're going to have to come back to these questions. Every time these questions are, we're going to have to come back to some curiosity and some figuring it out and some trying some new things and just kind of taking these 1 step at a time forward towards who we think we are and what the life that we want to live. And I wish I had like a solid answer for you about that, other than I get it. You're normal and we're together in this for sure.
For me, it comes down to it as I've been processing some of this. John Delaney talks about, or he had talked about in one of his podcast episodes, about how he and his wife, when they got together, they were like, look, these are our core values. And he said, those should pretty much remain the same throughout life, but it's your beliefs that are always evolving and are allowed to evolve, maybe from one person more than another. And I think that's what's kind of shaken me, because yes, my values are all still the same, but some of the things that I believe or how to put them into practice look very different than my early 20s. And I think that startles me, because I'm like, can I even trust myself? And I thought that I was so certain in some of this stuff. And I think that's overwhelming. So I have found myself just, again, processing a lot of stuff inwardly when I have a great life. I'm so blessed. I'm so fortunate. And I'm trying to remember to put gratitude at the forefront of my mind, but I can't turn off this little like gnawing of just who I am, my core, that is something that I carry internally every day. So I guess, how have you overcome some of those feelings? Because it sounds, again, like you've processed a lot of the same things that I'm going through. So how did you start creating your own happiness? And how did you process some of these big conversations with yourself?
Yeah, you know, I'm such a journaler. So for me, I process those things with myself. I have to get them out of my head. If it stays in my head, I just go around and around and around. And so that is probably some of the best way,
either physically writing them down and knowing that I'm like, this probably is just crazy talk, but we're just going to write it down so it gets out of my head. Or saying it out loud to someone. Like, it really does help for me, whether that's a really trusted friend or, you know, my partner. He and I are on, we have such a great relationship in that regard that I feel very safe to process a lot of these things. Or I started going to therapy too. Just having some way to process and to get what's inside my head out. I think that is probably the first step. And then it's really kind of tackling these things, sort of like you said about gratitude. So much of when it comes to happiness, so much of the happiness, I think sometimes we don't feel happy because we're looking around and we're comparing and going, they just seem to have a better life, or they're further along, or they've got all these things. And that gratitude piece really does help with that. Or setting up guardrails and be like, I am not going to be on social media, or I'm going to limit my time on social media. Like whatever the thing that triggers you, going, how can I put a guardrail up about that to be helpful? And I think some of it for me, at least, has been grappling with like grief and trying to find acceptance and letting go. And that isn't easy. But the more that I have, for instance, for work related, several years ago, I was really kind of fighting with, I thought I was going to be further along. And so I was very unhappy. I was very discontent when it came to my work. I was going, I'm just still doing this part of my job that I don't want to be doing anymore. I'm made for more than this. I could do more than this. But I kept pushing and pushing, and the doors just were not happening. They were not opening. And I think I finally got to this place of almost like resignation, where I just had this great sense of peace of going, it's okay that you didn't get there. You have done a lot of great things. And it's okay that you aren't going to be at that level that you wanted to reach. And it is okay to work for a paycheck. So like I had so much about work that had to be purposeful and my passion and all these things. And it just came down to, that's very privileged to be able to work a job that you're passionate about, that, you know, no, like I'm working this because we need the money. We have bills to pay. I got to do that. And there's good and something about accepting those things just brought a lot of peace. But it also was grief. You know, I had to deal with the sadness that I wasn't going to get to do the thing that I thought I was going to get to do. And so I think along the way, when it comes to that, like finding happiness and contentment and all those emotions that we really want to feel, there's just some of that reckoning with letting go, you know, and accepting and having peace, but dealing with grief. There's just this ebb and flow of that. And I think that that's really what has helped me as far as career. That's been a big thing that, you know, can drive unhappiness for me, at least. That has been really helpful in finding a greater sense of happiness in where I am.
Do you think that social media has made it worse? Because you can see some people, I don't want to say that you're in competition with, but people that are in the same area as you, that you're comparing yourself to. Because I just think about if I lived during the 80s. I mean, I was born in the 80s, but I think about if I were in my career in the 80s, I'm like, oh, maybe I wouldn't feel that way, at least not as much, because I'm not regularly opening up my phone to seeing other people's success.
Yes, I think that's a huge part of it. Because I think that it's, you know, it's very normal. I think it's our, you know, we do it in all things. So it's no wonder that we compare other people in social media. It's just you see two like things and you go, oh, well, which one is better? I'm looking at these two like things. You and I are both podcasters. That's a like thing. So it's easy to go, oh, well, she's better or I, you know, when really that just drives that discontentment and that unhappiness. And it really drives that competition when it's like, okay, when it comes to like this podcast, this is part of your creative expression into the world, which is uniquely you. You are different from me. And so my podcast is my creative expression of my uniqueness. So no one can really compare to that, because it's actually not two like things. We're very different people. And so I do feel like, I mean, I just told my daughter, my 13-year-old the other day, I said, it's really hard to be a teenager with social media. And she's not on social media. This one is not yet. And I was like, but everybody seemed alike and everybody's dressed alike and doing the same thing. It feels like originality is hard to find these days. And so I do feel like the constant seeing it, just you're going to always have that push and pull to, like, you know, compare and compete and rinse and repeat the more that we scroll and look at those things. So yeah, I think it's just hard these days. Mm-hmm. It's really hard.
Absolutely. I want to talk about creativity, because you talk a lot about creativity in your book and how that helps to combat the comparison. So like you said, my show is going to look different than your show. And even if someone's listening to both of us, you and I could be saying the exact same thing or having the exact same message, but just because someone is drawn to one of us, it hits differently, even if it's the exact same message. So you just never know what your impact is going to be, you doing it. So I think that's a reason to continue doing it or to start doing it. And that's why I think people should take big leaps and big chances, because there is room. It's so, I hate this saying, there is room for all of us. But there is, because your message is just so personally unique, even if it's a similar message.
Yeah, the things that, for me personally, that I have to constantly work on in regards to what you're talking about is, what is my goal? What is my goal? It's probably different than your goal of the show. Or, you know, what is a win for me? That may be a better way of saying it. And what is a win for you? And again, this is your creative expression. And so that's really what the most important thing is allowing you space to be creative. And, you know, it's kind of like if your kid came home and, you know, they had a piece of artwork that they did at school, or you wouldn't go, gosh, I've really seen better turkey handprints from other kids. You're going, no, that's like your unique hand. There's no one else in this world that will create something that looks just like that, because it was you. And I think that we need creativity in our life because it reminds us of our unique self. Only we can bring to the table. Like this book that I wrote, sure, there's probably countless books on the same subject. There's probably far better writers than I am, but this was my creative expression. And this is my unique take on these topics with these words and my stories, the stories that I've lived. And I think we need those creative moments to help remind us of that very thing, which I think helps combat that comparison. Because again, you're like, okay, but nobody else could do this. So it's just me. Sure, it may not have been as successful in whoever's eyes that we're deeming the judge of that, but we need that to help remind us of our unique selves.
Absolutely. I had Ashley Gadd on the podcast a while ago about her book, Create Anyway, and she was talking about creativity and why it's so important in motherhood. But she's a photographer, an author, and a podcaster. You are also an author and podcaster. I'm a photographer, author. We have these titles. But what about the woman that's like, wait, I don't know where I feel creative? And we were saying you could be creative in the kitchen. You could be creative in crafting. You could be creative and maybe you really like to do DIY around your house or painting. You're someone that's really into interior design. It doesn't have to look like the random things you're seeing on Instagram. You can find what builds you up in that way. I just want people to feel encouraged that it doesn't just have to look like these things.
Yes, and it doesn't have to be something that anybody else sees. You know, I remember the first time I heard this as creativity, I was like, what? But it makes so much sense. Problem solving is creativity. It requires you to think creatively to solve a problem. Like this thing. So think about moms in general. How many fires are they putting out every single day? And that takes creativity. So when you can start looking like, oh, look at that. I was flexing this creative muscle. I feel like even boiling it down to that is helpful, because then you're like, oh, I am creative. I was talking to someone yesterday and she said her kids were putting stickers on the wall. And she's like, obviously that's a no. We don't want stickers on the wall. But the kids were playing some game and needed to put stickers on the wall. And she's like, and I had this moment where I thought, oh, well, I'll just get the giant craft paper, put that on the wall, and they can put the stickers on the paper. And I'm like, that's creativity. That is solving a problem in a creative way. And so we're all creative in that respect. Or, you know, just like taking a look outside, going for walks. I think it's just stirring the creativity in us. It doesn't have to be, you know, art like we know of art. It could just be anything. Flexing that muscle. I love to say reading is creative. I love reading fiction. And the stories that you create in your head where you're seeing the images of the words you're reading, that's flexing creativity. It could be even just sitting down to read a book can be.
Mm-hmm. My friend the other day, I saw she posted they're having their 100th day of school. And so they have like a spirit week. And it was so cute, the different fits she'd designed for every day. And that is something that I would never personally be into or feeling like I had a creative bone in my body for something like that. But she did such a great job and it was such an outlet for her. And so, yeah, whatever is calling to you, just lean into that. One thing I want to make sure we hit on before we wrap things up is the idea of loneliness and friendship, because you said that you process a lot of this stuff with your husband. I'll talk to my husband about this kind of thing. I can't say that he is totally understanding what I'm going through. I don't know. Men are obviously different than women, but I think that he's not as introspective maybe about some of these things. So have you felt like friends have been a helpful piece in kind of coming to terms with some of these ideas?
Absolutely. It's friends, the older we get, it's hard. I think if you have even one friend you can talk to in some kind of honest way is a really big win. I don't think you have to have more than one. But I do feel like there's friends who, like if I'm processing work stuff, I have a friend that is really helpful in being able to talk about this sort of stuff with. Or a friend that if I'm wrestling with what you kind of mentioned earlier, how beliefs are changing. My values haven't changed, but my beliefs are changing. I have a friend that I feel really safe to talk about those things with. So I do feel like having someone, and again, you know, maybe you're like, I genuinely have no one. Then I would go find a counselor because it's somebody that you can process these things with. I think we need somebody that can just process with, just to be able, because it's lonely. You know, as my girls got into middle school and high school, you know, you're just kind of ushered into a new lonely season. Whereas elementary school, there was constant ways to meet other moms. There was so many play dates where you're also involved with this. And then go to middle school. And I mean, I never see a parent, like rarely, you know. So it is this season. And it goes back to us being in that mid-30s. I do feel like it just starts ushering in this new season that is very lonely. And especially with work these days and how so much of work is remote. Like I work, everything I do is by myself. You know, and I read a study that talked about the connection between exhaustion and loneliness, that people thought that they were lonely. And as they dug deeper in the research, they realized it was exhaustion that was causing loneliness. And I think a lot of us probably feel that coming out of 2020 with all of that. And then the more that we work by ourselves, it's just isolating more and more that leads to exhaustion and loneliness. And so I do think, gosh, finding one person that you feel safe enough with is a really, really needed thing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. This is all really great advice. And like I said, when I saw the title and just started digging through your book, I was excited to not necessarily feel alone. And yeah, I know that's very cliche to say, but I love that you wrote it. So before we wrap things up, what is one thing that you want readers to take away when they read your book?
I want readers to feel seen. I want them to feel like, okay, it's not just me, which is essentially what you and I have been saying this whole conversation, that I'm normal and I'm glad that someone else is feeling the same way. And these questions are I don't know, again, it's this like season of life in my 40s, my mid-30s to mid-40s, I'm waking up every night in the middle of the night. And that's when I start worrying about all these questions. But having this game plan during the day, like during the day when I'm awake and daylight is out, I can work on these things and come up with a plan so that when at night, when I start asking these questions, I'm like, no, remember we talked about this. It's okay. I can kind of talk myself back to sleep. And so I just want them to feel seen when they read this book.
It's interesting, again, that it comes up at night, because I just talked to someone about distraction in the brain. Actually, their episode aired yesterday, Rebecca Jackson. And she was talking about sensory input. And I told her a lot of times I'll close my eyes when I'm talking to people to try and gather my thoughts. And she's like, oh, yeah, you must be a highly visual person and you are overstimulated by seeing too many things. So you're just trying to process it. So I think for most people, when you lay down and you close your eyes, you're taking away a huge stimulation to where you just are with your thoughts. And that can be really overwhelming. So I like the idea of when this starts happening to me, having my journal on, well, I don't have a nightstand, but next to me on the floor and just kind of processing it down to say like, okay, you don't have to address this right now. That's a thought you had. Let's go to it tomorrow or with a friend, but you don't have to ruminate on this because I've taken note.
Yes. I mean, I think that is a trick that the final conclusion of the book, I go through a few different, when you still can't sleep, here's just some practical things that I do. And that is one of them. If I can just write it down so I know it's okay. You don't have to forget it. It's written down. You can think about that tomorrow in the daylight. You don't have to think about that, right? You can go back to sleep. That is so helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Sarah, where can listeners grab a copy of your book and connect with you online?
Yes. Well, you can grab the book anywhere that you buy your books from. And then sarahbragg.com, sarahbragg.com. You can find me there.
Perfect. Well, as we wrap things up here, I'm going to ask you two questions I ask all my guests. And the first one is, what's been a beneficial resource in your life that you want to share with the listeners? And I did see that you recently had a list of 10 books that you liked. Yes. I noticed Brene Brown is...
I know. Yeah. I had a friend go, so basically this was a love letter to Brene Brown. And I'm like, absolutely.
Never have read her.
You haven't read her?
What book would you recommend starting?
Start with The Gifts of Imperfection.
Okay.
That one is short and every chapter feels sort of bite-sized and it is so good. It's basically a guidepost to live a wholehearted life. And it's things that you need to accept and let go kind of idea.
Okay.
That one, I turn back to it. I read that one probably almost every year. Like I just come back to it. It's stuff to just keep processing. Like we're talking about comparison. She's talking about that. You know, so much of even what me talking about, and I quote her in the book about creativity and comparison. She was the one that started like opening my eyes. And so I would definitely recommend starting with that one.
You had another one on there that I was on my list to read this year called Burnout. And
yes.
I think a lot of what we're talking about, just maybe we don't even realize that this overstimulation and just overthinking our anxiety is actually just burnout and we don't call it that.
Yes. And that was really helpful for me a couple of years ago. I was really going through burnout. And it's by the Nagoski. I don't know how to say her last name. Sisters. They're two sisters. And it's really a good guidebook. Like they're asking you like questions where you can even write. Like it's really meant to help process through a lot of things. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I totally dominated your question, which was has been a beneficial resource in your life. Do you have another one?
Well, you answered what I was going to answer. So, okay. you set me up for that.
Yep, okay. Really well. I just saw that post. So that's why it was forefront of my mind.
Yes.
All right. Well, my last question is, what is something you can't stop talking about?
Okay. Well, just we're going to keep with the theme. It's just books. Like I love to read fiction. And I feel like I didn't allow myself to read fiction for most of my adult life until, several years ago. But that's what I'm constantly talking to people about is whatever I'm reading, like what fiction book I'm reading. My husband called me a book nerd. I just like any chance I get, I carry a book with me at all times just to be able to read a little bit.
What has been, it's February 1st, we're recording this. So what was one you read in January that you really enjoyed?
I read First Lie Wins. I feel like the author might be Ashley something, but it's one of Reese Witherspoon's book club pick. And it was so good. It kept me guessing and so many twists that I didn't see coming. So that was a really great one. I enjoyed that one.
Okay. I'll have to put it on my to-read list. Well, I also want to point listeners to your newsletter. I don't read many newsletters, but I absolutely look forward to yours every month. And because you do have a list of the books you're reading, the things you're watching. I love your newsletter.
Oh, thank you so much. That is one of my favorite things I do, the newsletter. And again, it's probably because I can't stop talking about all the things I read. Like, let me share. Let me tell everybody all the things.
I think it's because it doesn't feel so self-promoting. A lot of newsletters sometimes have that. No shade. But I just like getting to know you as a person.
Yeah.
feels more like you're my friend. As I'm,
oh, I like that. Thank you. That's really, I think that's the heart of it. I love that, you know, you can reply to it and it just starts an email conversation with me. And it does, it feels like you become friends with the people that are subscribing versus just, oh, here's somebody I want to sell something to. This is a really just, hey, this is what I would tell my friend if we were getting coffee or drinks. And I'd be like, hey, here's what I've been reading. This, you should totally read this. Or, you know, it just feels like a friend.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Sarah, thank you again for coming on. It was great to see you again.
Yeah, same. Hopefully we'll see each other again.
What did you think of the episode? I hope you enjoyed the conversation. To learn more about today's guest, including links, resources related to everything discussed today, visit the episode page at minimalistmomspodcast.com, where you can find the entire podcast archive, as well as my book, Minimalist Moms, Living and Parenting with Simplicity, or other ways to connect or work with me online. If you'd like to support the podcast, the easiest and most impactful thing you can do is subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, or YouTube, or wherever you listen to podcasts, and leave a rating or review of your favorite episode. Lastly, sharing the show or your favorite episode with friends on social media is very helpful and will encourage others on their journey to think more and do with less.